Welcome to the Business and Leadership Channel. My name is Michelle Boulay, and I'm so honored to be a sponsor here at this amazing conference because it's my passion to help you connect to your own inner leader and let that transform the businesses and relationships you create. I'm a life coach and healer and an internationally recognized award-winning dance artist. And dancing taught me to listen to my own inner voice and let that guide me to my success. A very common thing that happens for business owners, creatives, and leaders is that you're so close to your next goal or breakthrough and then you stop. Doubt kicks in, worry, procrastination, fear, overwhelm, which kill growth in your business and creative process. So I'm giving a talk here on Saturday, October 24th, where you'll learn tools so that you can show up with clarity and belief in yourself and your ideas, consistency to keep showing up, and the embodied and intellectual understanding to move you gracefully through the challenges you'll meet as you grow, as you go for your goals. If you can't make it live, pick up your phone now, go to Instagram or Facebook, find me, follow me, and DM me the word success, and I'll send you the free resource I'll be sharing at my presentation. It's also in the show notes. However, I do recommend you attend live here or at my main stage presentation to get the full scope of what I'll be sharing to help you realize your creative dreams. And now, please enjoy this next presentation.
Thanks for inviting me here. Let me just reshare my screen, or can you still see it?
I can see you. I cannot see your screen, so you leave.
I think because the, okay, now you probably see the screen again.
Exactly.
Very good.
So just before you go into that, I'm going to say a few words about you and about the session that you're going to deliver to us today. So Caroline Nottebardt is a renowned TEDx talk and creator speaker, bestseller author, and expert on leadership and personal development. With her PhD in neuroscience, she translates her passion for the brain into writing, keynotes, leadership seminars, and leadership retreats. She teaches at various top businesses worldwide, and she has received several excellence awards for her teachings. Hack Your Brain is her favorite and most requested keynote, which is based on her TEDx talk. Her inspiring talks will forever change the way we think about ourselves and others. She's also the founder of the Science and Leadership Academy, focusing on a great organization through the development of great leadership. And for more information on that, you'll be able to access the link through our chat box. And you'll be very welcome to join her community, obviously over the newsletter application. She loves to discuss life questions, especially with her children and with strangers whom she crosses her path. She's a devoted climber, hiker, and runner, and loves to spend time outdoors. And she lives in Frankfurt, Germany. And today, she is going to deliver a session called The Brain-Body Connection, How to Nurture Our Freedom to Decide. Basically, she will give us a fresh perspective on why we behave the way we do and how the freedom to decide in our brain fluctuates during the day. So we will learn a powerful strategy with which we can naturally nurture our freedom to decide and increase our life quality. This talk forms an inspiring bridge between science and spirituality, and once again, will forever change the way we think about ourselves and others. I am personally very much inspired to listen to this session. So, and everybody else in this session know that there will be a Q&A, and Caroline will answer your questions. We will leave that for the end, just for you to know. So the floor is absolutely yours.
Yeah, thank you so much, Anna, for those words. Yes, the brain-body connection. Let me start with a personal story to kick in this session. Well, when I was very young, when I was about 16, 17, that's the moment that I decided to leave my parents' place. And I come from a really very big family. And I have four sisters and one brother. And when I was 16, I decided to leave my home. And my mother, who I believe is quite a calm person, she's more in the background, she decided on the day that I left to give me one good piece of advice for life. So she came to me and she said, listen, I know that you have potential, but just keep in the back of your mind that the best thing you can do is to use your full potential so you can become the best version of who you are. So in sum, she said, go out there, do your thing, and become the best version of who you are. Now, as you will come to learn today in this presentation, interactive presentation, the body-brain connection, or your freedom to decide, has a lot to do with becoming the best version of who you are. So very warm welcome here to this session today. In my place here, it's 7 a.m. I'm not sure where you are. And please do interact with me in the chat or the Q&A whenever you feel like. So before I'm going to say something about how we can unlock our potential and increase our freedom to decide, let me tell you a few things about how the brain works. So you probably have noticed already that the brain never really is at rest. The brain is all the time busy during the day, during the night. And in neuroscience, whenever we're not really focusing on a task, but the brain nevertheless is very busy, we call that spontaneous activation. It's just a spontaneous activation that is popping up. Now, the activation that you have in your brain at this very moment, you use that to filter all the information that comes inside your brain and give that information a meaning. So you filter information that comes inside your system and you also give that a meaning. I'd like to do an experiment with you so that you also see how actually that works. And for this experiment, I would like to divide the group of participants in two, and you can self-organize. So to self-organize, just at this very moment, you pick either number one or you pick number two. So at this very moment for yourself, you just pick number one or two, and that's going to be your group. So when I'm going to start, I'm going to ask of all those people that belong to group number two to close their eyes for a moment. And I will show all the people of group number one, I will show them a picture. Then I'm going to ask group number one to close their eyes, and I will show group number two the picture. Then I'm going to ask group number two to close their eyes, and then I will change the slide. And on the slide, you will see a word that consists of four letters, but the first letter is missing. And then when I ask you to all open your eyes again, just as quickly as possible, you can complete the word. You can complete it by just saying out loud where you are, but you can also write that in the chat. And I can see Tammy is in group number one. There's no need to let me know in which group you are. It's just important for you to remember number one or two, the group that you are in, and just follow the instructions. So all the people who have chosen group number two, at this very moment, close your eyes. So all people of group number two, close your eyes. Now, all people of group one, also close your eyes. So all people of group number one, also close your eyes. And now all people of group number two, please open your eyes. All people of group number two, open your eyes. Now all people of group number two, also close your eyes, please. So everybody has their eyes closed at this moment. Now you can open your eyes again and you can complete the following word. And you can do it by just saying it out loud, or you can also just write down in the chat, because I'm very curious to see how you complete the word. We have Cook, we have Luke from Nadine, we have Cook from Stephanie, Kaul says Cook, we have Mona says Luke, who else says Luke, we have Book, we have another Cook, Amber says Book, Tammy says Book. So as you can see from the chat, we have a mixture of words, we have lots of books and cooks, we have also quite a few looks. So let me show you what it is that I did. So let me just go two slides back. If you cheated, I'm sure you noticed that group number one and two received different pictures. Group number one received this picture, group number two received the following picture. And what happened is that group number one usually says book, and group number two usually says cook, because they saw a kitchen. So what did I do? With one single picture, I shortly changed or manipulated the spontaneous activation that you have inside your brain, and you use this new activation to complete the word. And this is what happens all the time. So the activation in our brain, this constantly changes. It changes with a picture, as you've just noticed now, but it also changes with the emotions we have. So I'm not sure if you remember how it's like to feel freshly in love, or to be sad, or to be tired, or to be angry. Whenever we feel a particular emotion, we also tend to see the world out there in a different way. So the emotions we have change the activation patterns in our brain, and as a consequence, they also change what it is we see out there. Now, this spontaneous activation that we have inside our brain is also relatively stable. So it's not all changing. We also have a relatively stable part that we can link to our personality and the decisions that we make. So you as a person, you have also a particular stable pattern of activation. And when we measure that with a very large precision, we can predict certain parts of your personality and certain decisions that you make. This is super interesting, but we're not going to look at that. We're going to look especially at the changing part and how we can influence that in a positive way. Well, this busyness in our mind, some people also call that the monkey in the mind. So some people have this feeling, we have this voice inside our head, which is constantly chatting, telling you what to do. It's telling you what to feel. And especially in times of worries, this voice is constantly reminding you of the worries. It's the chatting monkey, right? This is the busyness in our mind. And we're going to have a look at how we can deal with this monkey in a good way. So, but for now, the only thing you need to remember is we have this spontaneous activation in our brain, which constantly changes with the pictures we see, our emotions. And this can present itself in our mind as a monkey or a chatting voice. The only thing you need to remember. So, but then have a look at how the brain deals with that and how this is related to unlocking your potential and nurturing your freedom to decide. Well, in order to explain that to you, I'd like to give you a definition of performance. The performance that we bring stands for the potential that we have minus our internal interferences. And what's the potential that you have? These are your skills, your knowledge, your expertise, your talents. And that's at this very moment the potential that you have. But in many situations, unfortunately, and let me give you two examples I'm quite sure you know. The first example is, let's say that we all have a potential to sing. This could be like great potential or little potential. And this potential this morning when you were taking a shower and you were singing in the shower, you brought your own best performance to sing. Your full potential to sing came out. But then here in this webinar, we would unmute yourself, you would switch on your camera and ask you to sing a song. What is going to happen with your performance? Well, it's very likely that when you have to perform all of a sudden in front of a group, that you will not bring your best performance. And why is that? Did you lose your potential to sing? You didn't. You still have your full potential to sing, but all of a sudden you can't access that full potential because all of a sudden your brain produces feelings of insecurity, nervousness, anxiety perhaps, or perhaps also you feel ashamed. And all of a sudden you don't have the full access to your potential. That's the first example. And the second example I'm quite sure you all know as well, and this is saying no. Saying no is just a two-letter word, and we all have the potential to say no, but at times saying no becomes really difficult. And why is that? This is because all of a sudden your brain starts to produce these feelings of insecurity. Perhaps you're afraid of missing the next career step. So all of a sudden, saying no becomes a really difficult assignment. Now the question is, what do we need to reduce those internal interferences so we can access our potential much better? Well, we need a very important capacity or skill. We need a skill that is called self-regulation. Self-regulation is your skill, your capacity to recognize those internal interferences and to regulate them so you can access your own unique potential much better. Let me give you an example and let me make the link to the freedom to decide. Well, let's say that you've worked on a project, you worked really long on this project, you're the lady in this example, and all of a sudden, unexpectedly, you receive this negative feedback. And what happens when we receive negative feedback? All of a sudden, our brain produces this strong reaction that we feel in our entire body. We might start sweating, perhaps we might start trembling, perhaps also we become loud. This is an automatic reaction tendency in our full body. And what happens then is our reaction. This is what other people straight away observe. It might mean that you become loud or you leave the room. But self-regulation allows you to recognize that automatic reaction tendency and regulate that so you can choose the reaction you want to display. This means that even though your entire body feels like crying or running away, self-regulation might help you to actually, in a healthy way, to regulate this reaction tendency and choose the reaction that you feel is appropriate to show in a particular situation. And this is such a beautiful human quality to have. This is your freedom to decide. That means that even if though you're asked to come on stage and to sing a song, it's self-regulation that allows you to regulate your feelings of nervousness, of stress, and you can still access your potential. Even if you're asked to say no in difficult situations, self-regulation will increase your freedom to decide and will help you to say no in a particular situation. So how do we increase our self-regulation and freedom to decide? How do we do that? Well, let us have a look at how that works in the brain. I've shown you that we have these internal interferences that are blocking us in our potential. Well, most of these internal interferences are being caused by too much activation in a particular brain structure. And this brain structure is called the amygdala. The amygdala, they're very small, they're very deep inside the brain. And even though they're small, they're very, very powerful. And this is because we need them. We need them for our survival. They will trigger a fight, flight, freeze response if there is real danger, and they will save our lives. They're also important in general for our emotions. But when the amygdala get too much triggered, too active in situations where there is no real danger, then they can lead to these internal interferences that block us in our potential. What do we need then for our potential? Well, for many tasks that are related to our potential, we need to engage a different brain structure. And this brain structure is called the prefrontal cortex, because this part of the brain is also fully in front of the brain. This is why we call it the prefrontal cortex. The prefrontal cortex plays a very important role in all your executive functions. This is planning your behavior, organizing your behavior, using your memory, planning, organizing, decision-making, focus, concentration. So many of these functions, they engage your prefrontal cortex. Now, the bad news is, and I'm quite sure you've already noticed, but the prefrontal cortex has a limited capacity. We could compare it metaphorically with a mental battery. This is your mental battery. And when your mental battery is fully charged, you can engage in any task and you will bring an excellent cognitive performance. But whenever we use the battery a lot, you can see that it also can reach its limits, and then you will struggle to bring a certain performance. To have an idea on how these two brain structures and how they work throughout a normal day, let me tell you a story. This is a story about all of us, a story about a normal day, or perhaps a day where things don't go the way we've planned them. And let us have a look what happens in the amygdala area and in our mental battery. And you've learned now that we want to have the amygdala little active, or not too active when there is no real danger or when it's not important. And we want to have the mental battery fully charged. So let's have a look at a difficult working day. So you woke up, and when you wake up and you haven't slept enough, you notice that the prefrontal cortex is not fully charged. And when the prefrontal cortex is not fully charged, you already notice, you know, you don't have the full mental energy of the battery available to you. But you wake up and you look outside, and it's raining outside, it's windy outside, and I don't know how it is for you, but at least for me, I like the sun. And if it's terrible weather outside, I'm a bit in a bad mood, which means that my mental battery will use its resources to deal with my negative mood. Let's say you have two children, you have two girls, and the youngest girl, she's 2 years old. And even though it's raining outside, she insists on putting on a summer dress. So she puts on the summer dress, but this is no go for going outside. And your daughter is very stubborn. She doesn't give in. So this is the first assignment of the day, to negotiate with your daughter. Finally, you're in the car, she's wearing trousers, you're stuck in the traffic, if at least you're allowed to leave the house those days. And what happens afterwards, this is a working day. And let's just assume that things just don't go the way we want them to go, and you use your prefrontal cortex absolutely like crazy. I'm exaggerating a bit, I know that. But at least also a day like that comes to an end, and this is your mental state after a very challenging day. Your amygdala is having free play, and your mental battery has reached its limits. And let me tell you a secret. This is not just happening to you. This is also happening to your partner, to your neighbors, and especially to young children. Because young children, they also have this mental battery, the prefrontal cortex, but the prefrontal cortex is not fully developed yet, which means that their mental battery is very small and very quickly empty. And if you put all those people with such a mental state into one household, what do you get? At least in my household, you more easily get people are annoyed, people are angry, people start a fight. And it is especially on those moments where you have the feeling that things can't get any worse, that you walk bare feet onto a Lego brick. And this is the moment that you lose control. This has nothing to do with the Lego brick. This has everything to do with your mental state. And during my time as a scientist, when I was looking into the papers describing these effects, I was thinking, this is such a sad thing, because this is our mental state at the time of the day where it's expected to have the best time of our lives. And our brain is not even capable of appreciating that anymore. So what do we need to do? Well, let us have a look at a solution to that. But first of all, let me show you how this mental state that we experience at the end of such a day, how this looks like and what it's called. This mental state is called depletion. When we put people in depletion, and usually these are poor students who participate in experiments, but when we put people in a state of depletion and we look inside their brain, what do we see? Well, we see that the amygdala reacts much more than usual. And on top of that, the connection between the prefrontal cortex and the amygdala has become dysfunctional. So if I just put that all together, you are the worst version of yourself at that very moment. This is the moment when we say hurtful things that we regret. That's the moment that when you receive an email, for example, your colleague, your boss, and the email is perhaps meant in a neutral way, chances are good that you will interpret that email in a negative way. And when you do respond to that email that very moment, let's just say that if you would wait until the next day, your response would look much of depletion. Before I will give you the solution to that, before I give you the solution on how to deal with this state, let me just tell you to which type of very negative consequences this state of depletion can lead to. And this is a story about something that happened in the States in 2014. There's many more cases, but from this case, I've also watched the videos, and this is why I can report back to you. There is a young guy, I think he's 16 or 17 years old, and he goes into a grocery shop and he takes a few donuts and a few drinks from the shop without paying. What happened outside? Somebody who passed by had made a video of that, and I've seen that several times. But inside the shop, the shop owner calls the police and tells them to pass by because a teenager stole something from his shop. And outside of the shop, you can see this teenager just walking from left to right with his donuts and drinks. And a few moments later in the image, you can see that the police is pulling over and they get out of their car. They take their guns, they point it at the young boy, and they call out, "Put your hands where we can see them." What the young boy did was very unexpected. The young boy, he raised his hands and he took a few steps forward in a very self-confident way, and he called out, "Then shoot me." What happened? Within a few seconds, one policeman starts shooting. And once the first guy started shooting, the other policeman started to shoot as well. And the young boy died in that incident. Now, the young boy was not carrying a weapon. To my opinion, he was not behaving in an aggressive way, as far as I can interpret that. But my question to you, and you're more than welcome to respond in the chat to that, but did those policemen react in the right way? Did they do the right thing? Feel free to post that in the... The tech hostess speaks to the importance of training the police to self-regulate. That is very right. If you look at that story, and of course, I also see a few no's popping up in the chat here. And let me just freely assume that the people posting no here, I still see some no's coming in. For those people here in the chat, I can assume that you're not trained as a policeman, but nevertheless, you knew this was the wrong reaction. So if we all know that this was the wrong reaction, then why did they shoot? They're not bad people. It was the wrong behavior. The answer to this question is here on this slide. So within a few seconds, their brain was taken over by amygdala activation. Some people also call that the amygdala hijack. And what did the brain tell those policemen to do? Fight, flight, freeze. And they shot, which was the wrong reaction. But in a state like that, the connection between your prefrontal cortex and amygdala becomes dysfunctional. And in fact, when your brain really says fight, flight, freeze, you're not even capable of thinking anymore. Your prefrontal cortex will be put out of play. It doesn't make it right. It's just that from a neuroscientific point of view, this is the answer to why those policemen behaved the way they did. And as the tech host said, it's extremely important, especially for those people in professions where you're dealing with emergency situations, to know how to self-regulate. It's of extreme importance. So their freedom to decide, if I make the connection with freedom to decide, was very short. I also see some other posts coming into the chat. Please know that at the end of the session, I have time available. I'm very happy to respond to these comments or also questions that you may have. So now what? So what is it that we can do to downregulate our amygdala activation and at the same time also give a boost to those functions of the prefrontal cortex, namely those functions that might be important for our potential? Well, as a scientist, I was looking for a solution to that. And in fact, I have found a strategy. A strategy that when you regularly practice it, you will see two major developments. The first development is that the amygdala, those structures that can lead to those internal interferences that can block you in your potential, that the amygdala will calm down. Not just only when we're practicing at that very moment, but also after some time of practicing permanently, you will see the amygdala will calm down. This means, in other words, that those situations that used to trigger your amygdala a lot, those situations will not trigger your amygdala that much anymore. That's the first development. The second development is that those functions that are engaging the prefrontal cortex, many of those will significantly improve, such as your focus will improve, your concentration, the quality of your decision making. These are functions, also creativity, for example, these are functions that will significantly improve. Now, what's the strategy that I'm talking about? Well, in order to understand the strategy that I'm talking about, let me first tell you how you practice that strategy. You might have already noticed that whenever you're engaged in a task or when you're not doing anything in particular, your mind starts to wander. Your mind starts to be busy with not the present moment, but busy with whatever it wants to be busy with. This is the wandering mind. And if you look at the neuroscience behind the wandering mind, there is one network that is called the default mode network, that when you're not engaged in a particular task, this will cause the mind to wander. This is the default mode network or the wandering mind. And especially when we have a lot of amygdala activation or a lot of stress, it's a default mode network that can get into a loop and that will always remind you of the things we're stressed about. That's the wandering mind. For the strategy that I'm about to present to you and that we will all practice together, we're going to activate another network in our brain. And this network in our brain is called the direct experience network. Now, why is this strategy so powerful? Well, whenever you activate the direct experience network, as a biological consequence, you will deactivate the default mode network or the wandering mind. And why is that? Well, it's because these two networks in your brain cannot be activated fully simultaneously. And this is what we do with this strategy. We very consciously activate the direct experience network. And we're going to do that all together, but how do we activate the direct experience network? Well, this is a network that is in very close connection to our senses, our body. This is where the embodiment comes in. These are what we see, what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we feel. Whenever we bring our full awareness to one of these senses, in our brain, we will activate the direct experience network. And what is going to happen? The wandering mind will calm down. Thinking back about the monkey in your mind that constantly chats, the monkey will become quiet. But how long do you think it takes before the monkey mind will start wandering again, or whenever your default mode network will make your mind wander again? Well, in the best case, this is going to take a few seconds, but especially if you haven't practiced at all, this might be really a case of a few milliseconds. So within one session, whether you practice a minute or whether you practice 1 hour, you are constantly switching between your direct experience network, which means bringing your awareness to whatever your senses are experiencing right here and right now. But then your mind will start to wander. And whenever that happens, we don't get worked up. We acknowledge the wandering mind. And that's a moment that very consciously we bring our awareness back to the direct experience, whatever our senses are aware of right here and right now. We're all going to do an exercise together because this is the theory, but I'd like to practice that with you and especially also give you the opportunity to ask questions about the theory or about the practice. And the exercise that we are going to do together is a relatively short one. I'd say it takes about a minute and a half. And we will activate the direct experience network in two different ways. The first way is that we are going to activate the direct experience network over our hands. So we will put our hands in front of us on the desk or on the knees. And in the first part of the exercise, we will bring our full awareness to our hands and just simply being aware of what our hands are sensing. Whenever you feel your hands are cold or warm, you're not really feeling your hands, but you're thinking about feeling your hands. So it's very simply about being aware of the hands in a non-judgmental way. Then after that part of the exercise, I will ask you to bring your full awareness to your breathing. Just be aware of perhaps the air that is flowing in and out. Perhaps you're aware of the movements of the breath. Whatever you're aware of in a non-judgmental way, that's going to be the focus of that part of the exercise. And don't forget, whenever your monkey has something to say about what you're doing, don't fight with the monkey. Just acknowledge its presence, say, I heard you, and bring your awareness back to either the hands or the breathing. It's a relatively short exercise, and I will guide you through it. And I invite you to sit up straight so that your breathing is not constrained, so that you can breathe in and out fully. You can put your hands on your knees or on the desk in front of you or wherever you are. If you lie down, just take a comfortable position. Have your feet flat on the floor if you're sitting. And I invite you to do this exercise with closed eyes, because with open eyes, the monkey gets very much triggered. So let's do this together, and we close our eyes. And the first thing we do together is we bring our full awareness to here and now, what it is we feel in our hands. And now very gently, you move your awareness to your breathing. You can be aware of the air that flows in and out, or the movements that are caused by the breath. Now with the next out-breath, I invite you to open your eyes again. I hope you're still here. Depending on the time zone you're in, you might have fallen asleep. I hope not, because this practice is about falling awake and not falling asleep. But if you fall asleep, then sleep, it means you're just tired. Well, let me know in the chat, how busy was your monkey, or how much have you noticed the monkey mind interrupting? On a scale from 0 to 10, 0 is the monkey did not interrupt at all, to perhaps a 10 where the monkey was interrupting a lot. We have a 9, a 0, that's good. The monkey was asleep, Pauline. Martin says 5. We have an 8, we have a 3, we have an 8 to 10 from Jill. An 8, a 4 from the facilitator here, from Zana. Yes, so indeed. So it's good you notice the monkey, because this is part of the practice. That we notice whenever we're not in the present moment. Noticing that is of vital importance and allows us to bring our awareness back to whatever is happening right here and right now. Palin also says, I don't find what I feel at my hands. Indeed, This is a common with many people when they do a body scan, for example, because with a body scan, you can really connect with what your senses are feeling right here and right now. And there are certain parts of the body you don't feel. So what's the advice? The advice is not to necessarily start moving around, but just have your awareness at that part of the body, even if you don't feel anything at all. So these are the, now we can also name it. What have we done here together? What's the type of practice we've done here together? Well, this is called mindfulness meditation, mindfulness practice. We've done a mindfulness meditation together here, but mindfulness, it's also, or I believe it's a quality of life, helps you to be present in the moment, not always be busy with what you did or what you're expecting to do, but the only moment that truly exists is here and now. And when you regularly practice mindfulness meditation, you will become much more aware of the present moment. So what's the core practice or the core principles of mindfulness practice? This is just a repetition of what you've done now. So we become aware of what's here and now with a non-judgmental attitude. This is what you're aware of to your senses, what you feel, perhaps also what you hear, what you see. And whenever the mind starts to wander, whenever you have distractions in your mind, you have thoughts about the past, the future, especially those annoying to-do lists that are always popping up in our mind. Whenever they come up, we're just aware of them. We don't judge them. We let them back go into the background by bringing our full awareness to what's here and now. And this is the embodiment part. Because what's going to happen here is that the amygdala will calm down. And what happens then, one beautiful effect that happens is that our freedom to decide will increase. And nobody likes a person who is out of control. Nobody likes a boss who is out of control. Parents are out of control. Kids are out of control. But it's with mindfulness practice that we can increase our own freedom to decide. There's many other effects as well. So I think you can re-access this presentation in the slide so you can look into more details. But let's just sum them up. We have a lot of cognitive effects, positive effects of mindfulness practice. We have a better cognitive performance, decision-making, memory, and creativity. If you're stressed for a very long time, what you see is that your memory will decrease. That's one of the effects that many people report. So when the amygdala calms down, you will see that your memory starts improving again. We have a lot of emotional effects. Negative emotions will reduce. You will nurture this freedom to decide with an inner calm and serenity. And we also know that stress, too much amygdala activation, has a negative effect on your health and immunity. This is just a biological effect. But if your stress levels, your amygdala levels go down, this will have a positive effect on your health and immunity. And especially in those times we're in, this is a very important effect. And last but not least, we also have social effects, positive social effects, better communication, better interaction. And one of the most beautiful effects that I've observed in other people who practice regular mindfulness is that they start to listen to understand and not to reply. So listening to understand and not to reply. So what's the big secret here? Let's say you think, okay, this mindfulness, this seems nice. I want to try this out for myself and see if this really works out for me. Well, there is one big secret, and this is here to practice, practice, practice. Mindfulness meditation is a very simple technique, yet very powerful, but it doesn't come just like that. You really have to practice. Better to practice 5 minutes a day than to practice half an hour just in the weekend. Regular practice will help you to develop those positive effects that are scientifically reported in science. So going back now to the advice that my mother had given me, because I started with that story. In sum, she told me, listen, I know you have potential. But keep in the back of your mind that one of the most beautiful things you can reach in life is to become the best version of who you are. It's not about becoming somebody else. It's about becoming who you are the most true expression of who you are. And I've come to understand from a scientific point of view, but also just from a personal point of view, that mindfulness really can play a powerful role here. And this is something that you can do as a person. Allow to think very big. This is something that we can do as a humankind to create a better version of humankind. And this, I believe, is absolutely an idea worth spreading with you. So thank you so much for your engagement here in this session. I know that it's a strange hour for many of us, either very early in the morning or late in the evening. So I very much appreciate your engagement here in this session. And if you have any questions, you are very welcome to ask them here in the chat or the Q&A part. Thank you so much. And of course, for those who want to read more and do more, let me just add that. I'm very proud to announce you that my second book, which is a story straight from my heart, is out since this week. It's as an ebook available on all platforms or as a print available on Amazon. And let me tell you that this is based on a real life story that I had with my oldest daughter on a hiking trip, where she asked me, "Mama, who am I and what do I want?" And it's with each step we took that this story developed. And it's written down as the pilgrim who trained her monkey.
Beautiful. Thank you very much, Carolyn. We've got some comments. Thank you. It was a very concise and a clear presentation.
Thank you. That's great to hear.
Yeah. And I am just monitoring the chat for any potential questions. So feel invited to write in any of the questions you may have, because we still have some 10 more minutes.
I also see Joshua writing. Perhaps I can respond to that. This is why Vipassana meditation seems to work, by down-regulating the default mode network. Indeed, Joshua, with Vipassana, this is also just about being present about whatever arises, whether this is a thought, a feeling, in a non-judgmental way. And this is indeed the core practice of mindfulness. But with Vipassana, you also see that we have the aspect of morality, which not necessarily is a part of the core mindfulness practice, but indeed it has very many overlaps.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. I have to share one moment that I caught in your presentation, or at least the way I interpreted it, how wonderful mindfulness is connected to the ability to decide.
Indeed.
Which is a very, very powerful message for leadership.
It is. That's actually the space, Azana, where we can take responsibility, right? And this is so important. It is important for leadership. It is important to all of us. This is our freedom to decide, the space where we can take responsibility.
Yeah. Beautiful.
I see there is a question in the Q&A from Raul. Says, okay, thank you for the clarity and perspective. Earlier you mentioned about feeling the hands and thinking about feeling the hands, what is the difference? Well, the direct experience is just being aware. And being aware means that in our mind, we don't have an image, we don't have a word, we don't have a thought. It's just a pure physical sensation. Whenever you think, oh, my hands are actually quite cold, in fact, you're engaging with your thoughts. This is a judgment, right? So this is, then you might notice a small switch away from the hands to a certain judgment or thought. This is where the difference is. It's a very fine difference, and it's difficult to explain in words, because in the direct experience network, there are no words. It's really simply a physical awareness.
There's another interesting question saying, can you say something about playing music and does it affect the amygdala?
Yes, there is actually quite a lot of science about that. You'd have to look that up. But from what I remember from the science about music is that whenever we sing, for example, or we perform music, actually this can downregulate the amygdala. And there is this one saying that says, whenever you go into your basement, you should, sing a song, because singing the song will actually reduce your amygdala anxiety. So indeed, if you Google that or Google Scholar to find the scientific articles, I'm quite sure you'll find studies that show that performing in music or listening to certain music can also calm down the amygdala. But what I do not know is whether they have the same permanent effects as mindfulness, for example.
Then there's a comment and a question from Pelin. Thank you, and it's very helpful. Aware of your hands, not judge. That part was very new for me because I had that question, is it cold or is it warm? So to call my mind to body, can you please talk more about this?
It's a hard thing. Of course, the moment that I say, don't think about your hands being warm or cold or something, this is of course what happens. We start thinking about that. So of course, if you are thinking about the present experience, so let's say that we do a mindfulness meditation, we bring our awareness to our hands and you start thinking about, are my hands warm or cold? This is a first step into the good direction because at least your minds or your thoughts are related to the present moment. And this will also help you to at some point let go of those thoughts and always return back to just purely a sensation. Again, this is very difficult to capture in words what this pure physical sensation is, because the moment that I use words to describe it, I'm out of the physical sensation. Yeah, so the moment that you really have these words or thoughts, you're back out of the present experience, but that's the moment that you can bring your awareness back. So what I do recommend, Tammy, perhaps what you could try out is body scans. There's many apps available. One here that I mentioned, because I also work a lot with Insight Timer. There's many apps that also have body scans available. And this can, if you do a body scan, you will also notice that certain parts of the body you're more aware of, and it's much easier to actually let go of your thoughts. So this might also help you to find your own practice. So if this wouldn't work out so well with the hands, but it works out very well with your breath, then just pick the breath. As long as you switch those two networks, it doesn't really matter which part of the body you use. So you can really make your own experiences and then develop your own practice.
And there's another question related to the bias and making the decision. It's actually related to the story of the shooting that you shared before. So how does bias play into making the decision?
Yeah, absolutely. Stephanie, it's a very, very good question. And this is exactly what happens. So unconscious bias, for those who do not know what the topic is about, unconscious bias are those certain judgments that we have that unconsciously lead to, for example, discrimination, fall decisions, or shooting in that case. So unconscious bias, the first step that we need to take to overcome them is to become aware of those unconscious bias so that they become conscious bias. And what, you know, if they're unconscious, it's difficult to deal with them because we're not aware of them. But with mindfulness meditation, and there's also studies, backing that up, is that if we regularly practice mindfulness meditation, it leads to an increased awareness of the biases that drive us. And one way of checking that is to Google for the implicit association test. Perhaps if somebody can write that in the chat, the implicit association test. This is a test, I think it's on the Harvard website. And this measures unconscious bias in a very, very clever way. And a study has shown that when we regularly practice mindfulness, we are less driven by those unconscious bias, or let's say we can counteract this unconscious bias much better. And this is exactly the topic of today, because we increase our own freedom to decide. We become much more aware of those biases, and that's also the moment that we can act against them. So in that sense here, Stephanie, because you mentioned indeed, you said to shoot is bad if the bias is, indeed it was also because you mentioned a black boy, it was in that case also a colored person, an African boy. And indeed that plays, it plays a big role. And it's especially those days, it's such an important issue to address. And mindfulness can play a powerful role here.
Thank you very much, Caroline. This was an amazing session. And we've got some comments like, thank you, it will change my daily practice. And wow, thank you for your answer. This is coming from Stephanie. It's great to know mindfulness can help. I'll go immediately to the final question that I need to ask you. What will be your top tip to stay embodied? What can you give us as a suggestion or a recommendation for the very end?
Well, here I would say regular mindfulness practice. Mm-hmm. Mindfulness practice in the way that we always become aware of senses in our body. Our body is so wise, Zana. The answer to so many life questions we have is not just what it is that we can talk about, but this is what we feel. Feeling something, this is where your inner wisdom lies. So if it comes to embodiment, just tune in with your body with mindfulness meditation on a regular basis, and you'd be surprised how wise your own body is. So this would be my tip, my final tip.
Beautiful, beautiful. We will remember the wisdom of our body after this.
The wisdom of our body, that's right.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And just a couple of logistic details for this very end. So you can find in the chat box, perhaps the tech host can repeat that, a link to Caroline's book and also maybe a link to her website. You will be able to find also a link to the sponsor of our channel, also the coffee breaks in the portal, and to our Facebook group where we invite you to join in and continue the discussion. Also, we remind you that you can re-watch this session for 48 hours for free after this moment, and then afterwards you can even purchase it to have it at your own a disposal in your own library so you can enjoy it at your own pace and time. And you can also do that with the entire conference. So go to the conference website to purchase recordings. We would appreciate it as a thank you to us, and it would also enable everybody else to access it for free. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for your comments. And Caroline, thank you for sharing your wisdom with us this morning.
You're most welcome, Zana.
Goodbye. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.